Okay. So, you know, I'm back to the bond handout, and we've gone through lots and lots of things, and we came to the topological statement we wanted to the not theoretical statement. So we have to solve these equations, but I first wanted to identify the target space. That was the target space. That was slide 16. So let's go back to slide 16. And, right, and now I have a better formulation for the target space. So the target space is, okay, if you looked at the proof of the Brackett-Rise theorem, it only needed the skeleton locally. I always, when I was collapsing stuff to the skeleton, I only needed to know that it was locally a straight line. I didn't need to go near vertices. So if you look at it, you find that the same theorem holds, or the same proof holds, even when the skeleton, now drawn in black, has vertices. So this is a skeleton vertex. This came from a four-dimensional vertex. This is, so the thing being noted here is a Y-graph union a line, and the arrows are in purple and green in this picture. Okay? And there is no distinction between purple and green. I guess the only distinction is that, never mind, there is no distinction. Okay? So, using bracket rise, I get the same type of diagram as before. I'm allowing two in, one out vertices, which means trees and wheels. And the relations I mode out by are, well, 40 follows from the STO relations, but you, if you want, you can impose it. You don't have to. IHX relation, I didn't tell you, but it follows from all of this, so I mean, I didn't even bother to write it now, but it follows. You could impose it if you wish. There is Taylor's commute as before. There is this cap-pull relation as before. There are two lovely relations that involve the Klein bubble, the so-called when, but we don't need them today, so ignore them. Okay? And there is one further relation, which comes from Rademeister 4, which I did not introduce until now, because until now we never studied the associated graded in the context where there was a Rademeister 4. So what's the relation coming from Rademeister 4? So, by the way, in ordinary knot theories, there is a very, when you talk about finite type invariants, in ordinary knot theories, there is a similar relation. So what does Rademeister 4 say? It says that if you have a vertex, so these are one of those plus or minus vertices, okay? And you have a lasso going around it, you can pull it out and then push it back in as a completely virtual lasso, where all the crossings are virtual. So that was Rademeister 4. Okay? But, so this is equal to this, which means that this minus this is equal to 0. Okay? But you see, I could also get from here to here by turning this crossing into a virtual, by flipping this from being a real crossing to a virtual, then flipping this, then flipping this. But flipping any one of those is really a semi-virtual. So I find that the sum of three semi-virtuals is equal to 0, which means that in the associated graded, again, you'll have the same skeleton, and you'll have a piece of the skeleton coming from the Y, another piece of the skeleton coming from this lasso. So this is one piece of the skeleton, here's another one. And this arrow plus this arrow plus this arrow is equal to 0. The sum of the three arrows is equal to 0. Okay? And I wrote it here, well, I actually wrote it with some other sign convention. But basically, if you have an arrow at the bottom of a vertex, it's equal to putting the arrow on the top left branch or putting the arrow on the top right branch. And I've indicated that it's a double-sided arrow. So it could be either going in or out, because randomizer 4 holds whether the lasso is below or above. By the way, if we were to talk about smooth vertices, so vertices like the ones that I don't want to talk about, so like this one, then the smooth vertex actually breaks the symmetry between over and under. And you get a slightly different picture, which is actually easier. But anyway, okay, one further comment. Okay, so what is, so now I told you what is AW. So W is the context and A is associated gradient of a skeleton that looks like a Y and an arrow. So a Y and one directed strand, okay? But in fact, there is a little isomorphism theorem which one can prove, and it is, and here's the proof before the statement. So the vertex invariance relation, this relation, VI, vertex invariance relation, tells you that if you have an arrowhead on a, or tail on a strand below a vertex, you can always push it above the vertex as a sum. Okay? So basically, I could have pushed this to above. It will go either here or here. Okay? And in fact, it doesn't matter what I had on the lower trunk, the lower piece, I could push it up. Okay? And then I would have an empty lower piece, and I would have like three active strands. This one, and that one. And the claim, which is not hard to prove, is that this is an isomorphism. So it's very easy to write an inverse map and to show that the two maps are inverses. So, in other words, A of the skeleton Y followed by an arrow is the same as the sort of A of the skeleton in which you just have three strands. By the way, the same thing is true in ordinary knot theory. And
in ordinary knot theory, you don't have.
In ordinary knotted graph theory.
Exactly.
Okay? And in fact, it also has a topological origin. So knotted graphs, you might think, are complicated, okay? But knotted graphs are, in fact, in some sense, a fake. Topologically, they're just combinatorics plus tangles. So you see, if you have a knotted graph, a complicated knotted graph, you can always choose a maximal tree in it. Trees are contractible. So you can contract the tree to until it's nearly a point. And then it's just combinatorics. You just bring it to a standard position, and the only thing that the information in it is just combinatorics. And the complement of the tree has no vertices anymore. So it's just a tangle. So knotted graphs are really trees cross tangles in some way, or sort of combinatorics cross the topology of tangles. And this is just a remnant of that. So if you have a graph and you might want to knot it, you can get rid of it and be left with just tangles. Okay? Anyway, so what's the... so what does my theorem... Sorry, what is... So remember, I told you I was going to go through a sequence of six statements. And the first one being this, there exists an expansion, and then the last one being this Kashiwara-Verne thing, or convolutions, a statement about convolutions. So the first one was there exists an expansion. But now what does it expand to? It expands to there exist values for the generators that satisfy the relations. One generator, R, the crossing, I've already fixed. And the value is the exponential of an arrow. Okay, and it's in AW of two strands. Just an exponential quiver of arrows, okay? So what remains is the statement, there exists omega, which is the value of a cap, so the value of a line which is capped, okay? And a value for the vertex. The value for the vertex should be in, so V should be in A of the skeleton Y. But the skeleton Y is really the same as this skeleton. Well, I mean, these are isomorphic. So there exists a V on two strands. Basically, if V had vertices on the bottom trunk, you push them to the top. Okay? So there exists a omega here and V here, so that Rademeister 4 is satisfied. What does Rademeister 4 say? It says, if you have a vertex followed by a crossing, you can slide the crossing down below the vertex, and then you'll have two crossings and the vertex. So, basically, if you take this V and place it on these two strands, and you take R and place it on these two strands, it's equal to placing V here, and then placing a copy of R here, and a copy of R here. This is an algebraic equation written in this space of diagrams. Okay? Then there are similar relations for the annular unzip and for the disk unzip. And I think now I can reveal the meaning of green. The meaning of green is, I don't want to talk about it. Okay? And it's the same, but I want to skip it for purposes of brevity. Okay? That's the only meaning of green. Okay? Now, by the way, I think the statement now becomes believable. So, basically, think about it. What is V? V is some sort of a combination of trees and wheels. Forget the trees for a moment. The trees, there are two types of trees. The trees with head on the left and the trees with head on the right. The trees with heads on the left, call them F, and it's an element of the 3D algebra. The trees with heads on the right, call them G, and it's an element of the 3D algebra. So at least the tree part says that there exists a combination, there exist two elements of the 3D algebra, such that, well, when you multiply them with R, with some exponential, you get the same as multiplying them with some BCH product of exponentials, right? This is sort of the product of two exponentials.
So it's not
so,
for any V?
No. Oh. Not every V satisfies that. The statement of the theorem is that there exists a V. V is the unknown. This is the equation it has to satisfy. To satisfy. So this is sort of already starts to smell like Kashiwara-Verne. Now, it will not smell any better at any point in the future, because I'm actually, rather than telling you how it relates to Kashiwara-Verne, I will tell you directly how it becomes a statement about convolutions. Right? So in fact, you see, I told you that I said it here. The diagrammatic statement is somehow more directly related to the Frege algebra statement, but I'm going to go through a different route and tell you go straight to convolutions. Okay? Anyway, next. Okay, now I want to tell you about the thing that I called low algebra before. So, that space of diagrams, AW, okay, that space of diagrams that is shown above, this one, I claim has a Lie algebraic interpretation, but not a free Lie algebraic. Given an honest finite dimensional Lie algebra, this has a meaning in that, as a space of formulas for that Lie algebra. So, let G be some finite dimensionally algebra. Let let xi be a basis of g, and let phi j be the dual basis of g dual. Okay? And I want to tell you that a diagram like this, so the skeleton here is this line here, and the internal structure is in purple. So I want to tell you that a diagram like this represents an element in the universal enveloping algebra of IG. What's IG? So IG is something that I learned when I was in, so you know when you, there is the sort of group of rotations, it's, what is it called? There is the Galileo group and the Poincaré group. No, the Lorentz group and the Poincaré group, right? So the Lorentz group is group of rotations, so SO, let's pretend it's Euclidean, so SO3. And then the Poincaré group is rotations with translations. So it's SO3 semi-direct product R3. Okay? But this can be generalized to an arbitrary algebra. So replace this by G. The action of G on R3 is in fact the action of G on G dual. So you can always look at G semi-direct product is dual, where you take the dual as a commutatively algebra, because R3 is, like when you think about translations, it's commutative, but G acts on the G dual. And then this is often called inhomogeneous rotations. So I will call this inhomogeneous version of G. So given any Lie algebra, IG is just defined to be G dual semi-direct product G, where you take G dual as abelian. So I claim that any diagram becomes an element of the universal enveloping of IG. How do you do that? Well, first of all, you define Bijk to be the structure constants of the Lie algebra. And then, given a diagram, you mark all the edges with lowercase Latin letters. When you run out of them, you start putting subscripts or tags, whatever, okay? And then, at every vertex, you have one outgoing vertex and two incoming, sorry, one outgoing edge and two incoming edges. So you have three indices coming in, so you put the structure constants labeled with, by these things with the appropriate order. So you have it in the appropriate order, so you have it twice. You have here B, M, because M is the outgoing, and then K because K is on the left, and then L because L is on the right. Okay? And then you form a sum, and the sum is, you let all the indices run from 1 to the dimension of the Lie algebra. You take the product of all the structure constants that you have, and you read along the bottom line, and every place you see an outgoing edge, you put a dual element with that index, and every place you put, you see an incoming edge, you put a basis element of the original Lie algebra with the corresponding index. So here I see phi I, phi j, incoming n, so xn, incoming n, so xn, outgoing n, so phi n, and so that's the element that you get. And now I have a sum of words in the alphabet x and phi, but that's exactly an element of the universal enveloping algebra of IG. Okay? So automatically I get a map from AW to U of IG.
This IG is a subspace of affine algebra, which is it?
No. It's just it's just another finite dimensional algebra. It's generally non-compact, not semi-simple. So you know, like people have somehow a bias in favor of semi-simple algebras. This is not, even if G was semi-simple, this will not be semi-simple. So okay, the same construction works the same way when you have A of several strands. But because given the fact that there are no erasers, this cannot be shown. So basically, if you have a number of vertical strands, of skeleton strands, so if you have AW of, say, two skeleton strands, so like where V belongs, okay, V is an element here, then this will map given the algebra. So I'll do exactly the same construction, except I will get two words. One word when I read along here, and one word that I read when I read along here. So I get the output in U of IG, tensor U of IG. Okay? Okay, now it's lovely to see what matches with what. So basically, let's see all the relations. So 40 relation is irrelevant. It got swallowed by Taylor's commute, all the others. The vertex invariance relation, again, is irrelevant because I'm only talking about strands without vertices. I don't need vertices anymore because I told you I could slide things off. So, okay, the STU relation is, well, this is a bracket of two Lie algebra elements, is equal to their commutator in the universal enveloping algebra. The IHX relation is the bracket of an element with its dual, sorry, with a dual element, with an element in the dual, is, again, this is the, well, is given by the same structure constants as the bracket of xi and xj. So basically, this is the fact that the action of G on G dual is the adjoint action. The Taylor's commute relation is the fact that I consider G dual as commutative. So the order of multiplying things in the universal enveloping algebra is irrelevant. And the IHX relation, which is not written here, is the Jacobi identity of the bracket. Okay? So I just explain why this is well defined. Anyway, the previous statement, the statement written here, when pushed via this given a specific Lie algebra, becomes a statement in a Lie algebraic language. Namely, V becomes an element of U of IG tensor U of IG. Omega, well, I think I don't want to talk about green. Okay? So I'm now restricting my attention to V and to solving Rademeister 4. So V becomes an element of U of IG tensor U of IG. And the equation it needs to solve is an equation that can be written in U of IG tensor cubed. Okay? But so now the algebraic statement is with IG being the semi-direct product, with R, lowercase r, being the image of a single arrow. A single arrow turns out to be just the identity element of G dual tensor G. And upper R being the exponential of the identity, and this makes sense in some completion of U of IG with U of, well, in principle this should have been IG again, but since the right strand for R has only arrow heads, and heads correspond to the Lie algebra, not to the dual, I could think of it as being an element in U of G. Then, with these things, there exists an element V in U of IG tensor squared, so that this V satisfies that V multiplied by something messy is equal to a product of two R's with V. Now let's understand this equation. So this is this equation. So maybe the right hand side first. This is V installed on strands 1 and 2. This is R installed on strands 2 and 3. And this is R installed on strands 1 and 3. So R13, R23, V is the right hand side. I guess I'm reading from the bottom to the top. And then here I just have V installed on strands 1 and 2, and R is above the vertex. In order for the equation to make sense, I need to push R to below the vertex. Meaning I need to use vertex invariance to take every arrow that appears here to down below. But the vertex invariance relation tells you that if you have an arrow ending here, then when you push it down the vertex, it becomes a sum of ending it here or ending it here. But that's exactly the co-product on the universal enveloping algebra. So, V times the co-product tensor 1 applied to R is equal to this. And this is an equation in principle in U of IG tensor cubed, but the last component only involves heads, so it's in UG. Okay. I think I want to go to the next statement, and after that everything should be believable. Okay? So The next piece is that U of IG has a differential geometric interpretation. And here it is. So, it is the space of tangential differential operators on functions on the Lie algebra. So, if you have functions on the Lie algebra, tangential differential operators means differential operators in which you differentiate only in the directions that are tangent to the orbit of the Lie algebra acting on itself. Right? The Lie algebra always acts, the Lie group always acts on the Lie algebra, it decomposes it into orbits. I suppose if this is if this is the situation, then the Lie algebra looks like an R3, and the orbits look like spheres, and then tangential differential operators are differential operators in which you only differentiate in the direction tangent to those orbits, to the spheres. Okay? Well, again, the orbits are generally not spheres, but in this case, it's spheres. Okay, so I claim that the universal enveloping algebra of IG is somehow a space of tangential differential operators. Why? An element of G star just becomes, well, phi in G star is just a function on the Lie algebra, and a function is a differential operator by multiplication, it's a degree zero differential operator. And more interesting, an element of the Lie algebra becomes a tangential derivation. So if you have an element of the Lie algebra, it in itself is a differentiation because you differentiate in the direction of conjugating by this Lie algebra element, of going in the orbit in the direction that this Lie algebra element specifies. And then it's very easy to check that the relations in the universal enveloping algebra go to relations between these differential operators, namely, so phi's, so elements of G dual commute. So this corresponds to the fact that multiplication operators commute. And I guess all the other works as well. Okay? So so with this, I can interpret V as a tangential differential operator. Okay? And everything has an interpretation in differential operators, operator language. And then I think I basically Rademeister 4, so this statement, becomes the fact that V acting on some specific function is equal to, well, some has some commutation relation with acting with some specific function, okay? And actually more interesting, the relation, one of the green relations that I didn't specify, becomes the fact that V is a unitary operator. So V followed by V dual is 1, okay? And this is the point where I want to stop, but I want to emphasize that this unitarity is what becomes an equality of integrals. Because, right, because the convolution statement is about equality of integrals. Well, the details are written here, but in principle, what does it mean that an operator is unitary? It means that, on one hand, it means that VV dual is equal to 1, and VV dual is in our language, because the dual of multiplication by a function is multiplication by the same function, and the dual of differentiating in the direction of differentiation is negative differentiation. This is by integration by parts. So on one hand, this it's completely in our language. On the other hand, it means that the inner product of VF with VG is equal to the inner product of F and G. So it's an equality of integrals, right? Because the inner product is the L2 inner product. So this unitarity statement, where does it appear here? It's going from here to here. Becomes an equality of integrals. And this equality of integrals is precisely the equality of integrals that this equality of convolutions that Kashiwara-Verne asserts. And again, I mean, sort of, obviously I skipped many details, but at least it should be believable. Okay? So I think we should stop here. And next time I will tell you that this is not just theory, but also computations. Everything is computable, and when computed, not theoretically, it reduces to a generalization of the Alexander polynomial.